Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another wonderful evening of broadcasting here on LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block, and I am your host in the studio, my own studio, hidden out here in little lonely Star, Idaho, and Jim Christina, and on the phone with Bobby Jean Bell, who's hiding out in her little studio in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hey, happy to be with you today, Jim. I'm excited about tonight's show.
Oh, me too. Me too. And you know what? I was going through my musical library, and I was on Amazon looking for a piece of music. I thought, wait a minute. I have the Sparrow. Sammy Davis Jr. I thought, what a great piece of music for this book.
That was a perfect piece of music.
I know. And I already had it, so I didn't have to buy any music for tonight. So I'm pretty happy about that.
You got it. Yeah.
I'm pretty happy about that. So we have all kinds of stuff going on. We have all kinds of things happening. We have the young lady that we talked about last week, Yasmin.
Yes.
She is moving forward. She's gotten a copy of Tuscany Bay Books, a shameless self-promotion packet.
She is going forward
with that. She will be contacting Mickey Mickelson at Creative Edge. And she's moving forward with that. And her book actually is getting some sales on it. She really likes the new format and the new cover. And everything is just going swimmingly for her.
Exciting. And you can do it for others as well.
We can, but I don't know how often I want to do it for free. But she is only 17. She's a brand new writer. And I thought, well, let's give her a leg up.
Yeah.
So talk to Richard about it. Richard says, absolutely, let's do it.
Everybody needs a mentor to get them started.
Well, I believe so. I believe that's absolutely correct. But I'm going to tell you, tonight's guest needed no mentor. And even though he says the very first book took him years to write, I find that hard to believe. But our writer tonight is Mr. Matt Coyle, and he's the author of the best-selling Rick Cahill crime series. He knew he wanted to be a crime writer at age 13. Oh, wow. When his father gave him Raymond Chandler's The Simple Art of Murder. I read that book. That's pretty good. His books have won the Anthony Ben Franklin Silver Award Reviews Book of the Year Silver and San Diego Book Awards, and have been nominated for the multiple McCavity, Seamus, and Lefty Awards, as well as named to numerous best of lists. Lost Tomorrows is the sixth book in the Cahill series. Matt hosts the Crime Corner podcast on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network and lives in San Diego with his yellow lab, Angus, where he is writing the next Rick Cahill novel. And actually, he lives in my old stomping grounds.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody lives in your old stomping grounds. You must have done a lot of stomping.
I have a lot of stomping grounds.
You do.
When I was growing up, where he lives, Claremont Mesa, is that's where the Claremont Bowl used to be. And in 1966, we went to go see Gary Puckett and the Union Gap.
Oh, my gosh.
When they were brand new.
Well, and this book takes place, a lot of it, most of it, in Santa Barbara. And although we never lived there, that's a place Jim and I love to escape to. And so some of what he writes about, I'm like, oh, I know that wharf. Oh, I know that street. Oh, I know.
So without any further ado, would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Matt Coyle. Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, we love good writers. Well, we love all writers, but we really like good writers.
The ones that don't let us go to sleep at night because we're reading.
Bobby Jean doesn't sleep anyway. But, you know, when I'm going through this book and I'm thinking, God, you know, If I were writing the great American novel, which I think I probably already have, every writer thinks they've already written the great American novel. But I was thinking, holy crap, this book is really, really cool. And that it's got great characterizations. It's got wonderful characters. And it's got more twists and turns than a bad racetrack. And it's just so much fun to follow. And you can actually follow it, which is pretty kind of cool. And kudos. And I haven't read any of your other stuff, but I will now. So,
well, thank you. Thanks for the kind words.
Well, they weren't kind.
Matt, you got me at the first word period, second word period. So it was really the first two sentences, I guess, in capitals. Krista, dead. Okay, you know, I have to keep reading.
What a way to start a book, Krista.
It's a little bit of a hook there, a little bit of a hook.
Just a little bit of a hook.
No, a lot of a hook. And so you go, okay, now how far do I have to go before I find out what's really going on? And before you realize it, you're at the end of the book, and you still mostly know what's going on, kind of. But it's just, I mean, everybody's kind of like in and out, and you go, whoa, wait a minute. And the one detective that hated it, well, I'm not gonna give that away. But anyway.
Yeah we don't want to do any spoiler alert, but to say that there are lots of surprises.
There are lots of prizes. And I have to say, your character development on Rick Cahill, of course, is absolutely wonderful. And you've had enough time to really develop him. But your other characters, actually came in and fit right into the storyline without a beat. And I really like that in a writer. So explain, Lucy, how did you do that?
Well, I do know Rick pretty well because I've been writing him now for 18 years. And by the way, I love the bumper music. I'm old enough to remember Beretta. But, you know, I'd forgotten that Sammy Davis Jr. Sang the title song, which is fantastic. Yeah, so regarding Rick, I've been writing him, and you had some kind words in the beginning, but actually it took me 10 years to get published from floppy disk on a used IBM ThinkPad to actually getting a book deal. So I've been writing this character for 18 years now, even though there's only 6 books out. And so I know him pretty well. The other characters, I generally... I don't outline much. I have kind of a skeletal idea of what's going on, but the characters kind of fit the needs of the story. But then once they get on the page, sometimes they kind of speak for themselves. And that's happened a number of times. One character is not in this book too much. Moira, his sometime partner,
right,
kind of took over a book for me at one time. Blood Truth, the fourth book I wrote, but. Like Leah, I didn't really, the sister of the dead cop. I didn't really have as big a role thought out when I started writing her, but then I saw that it made sense for her, the role to get bigger. And she and Rick, I mean, Rick's back in the city, is up in Santa Barbara, where he lost his wife, which the wife was murdered now it was 14 years earlier.
Right.
And he was arrested for the murder. He was a cop at the time, arrested by his own police department, but never tried, released, but never exonerated. So he goes back there for the funeral of his former partner, who was hit by a hit and run car accident. And because he doesn't really want to go back up there because, you know, the police department hates him and they think he's guilty of murder and they're all going to be at the funeral, but he thinks it's the right thing to do. So he goes up there, and when that happens, the sister of the dead cop, Leah, asks him to investigate because she doesn't think it was a hit and run. How could her hero cop sister be killed in something as mundane as a hit and run? Mm-hmm. So Leah kind of grew as the story did too.
One of the things that I particularly enjoyed in your writing was Colleen, the wife that died 14 years before, and Krista, who perhaps was in some of the other books, but we're coming to this as a standalone, and it's not a spoiler alert. You tell us in the first line, she's dead.
Yeah, Krista,
you write about them. When you do write about them, we feel like we know them. And it's really wonderful because we have empathy for them, and we know they're no longer here. We see the tortured soul part of Rick that he keeps going back to years with his wife and has a lot of regret. And I think whether we all can look back at our life at some point and have, it may not be this regret over this same kind of situation, but something that haunts us, you know, that we can never really let go of it. And I think for all readers, there'll be something that we wrestle with. And I did appreciate the way that you drew those two women and the impact that they made on his life.
Well, yeah, thanks a lot. He actually, it's funny you talk about how people may find, you know, they have their own feelings from their own personal experiences, be drawn in by the emotion from what happened to Rick. And that's the way I try to write scenes and characters where, of course, I've had a pretty boring life. I haven't been a cop. I haven't been a doctor. I haven't been a soldier, a lawyer. So, but I'm of a certain age where a lot of things have happened in my life. You know, you lose people in your family and love and lose love. So whenever there's a traumatic scene, I can put real emotion in the scene, even though if the scene that actually would happen in the scene is not something I'm familiar with in my life. So it's very nice. It's good to hear that you feel that way. It's funny you say regarding Krista, both Colleen and Krista are backstories to the very first book. They're not. Colleen is dead before Yesterday's Echo, the first book comes out. So she's never. No, that's it's fine. But because Rick feels responsible for her death, even though he didn't kill her, something as you read this book, you know, something that happened the night she died, he feels responsible. So he carries that guilt throughout the book.
Sure. Well, you explained Rick to me the other night on the phone, and that, you know, Rick was somewhat of an asshole.
Yes.
Right up front, you said that. And, you know, I kept that in the back of my mind as I was finishing this book. But I saw some of it come. But then he would stop himself and turn around. He just didn't want to be that person anymore. And I found it really, really, really compelling that you took a character that you've written so well over five novels, and now you're taking him to a different level where he just really doesn't want to be an asshole anymore, and he knows he's an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Well, he knows he can't live with him.
He doesn't want to live with it.
He's really not comfortable in that skin, you know. Right. And it is interesting, too. You say it, I think, a couple times in the book about his father's and his father's creed. You know, which is sometimes you have to do what's right, even when the law says it's wrong. And, you know, we maybe have all felt that, too. We may not take it to the degree that Rick does. But, you know, there have been lots of times, you know, that we may have done, you know, we passed a car. We should be, you know, going faster than we should have because, you know what, I got to get out of that guy's way, you know.
or I'm tired of him passing me and slowing down.
No,
that would be more for me, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see, you see growth in, I would say, Jim, I'm right there with you, that even though we haven't read the other books, I could feel growth in this character from the beginning to the end of the book.
It's like he was getting tired of being him.
Mm-hmm. And I think as a reader, I kind of wanted him to stop. I was eager to see if this would develop him further as a character.
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with the relationship he was developing with Sister Leah. And that had a lot to do with settling him down.
And I liked Leah.
Me too. I really did. I really did.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know,
She's in a hard place with him.
Bobby and I come from different places. Bobby Jean's not a writer.
Yeah.
And she looks for certain things in a book. And she is a reader. She's one of the most loyal fans you'll ever have. And I come from being a writer standpoint, and I look at certain things like character development, and I look at areas and where you place your characters and what environment, and is it realistic? Is it real to me? If it's real to me, then it's real to most readers. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you hit Santa Barbara on the nose. You hit San Diego on the nose. I mean, everything you talked about, I've either been there, seen it, you know, or played there. So it was like right on the money. And I just said, whoa, this guy actually, well, you can tell he's from San Diego.
Yeah. It was a little more difficult. Go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
Well, regarding Santa Barbara, the first five books that I wrote did take place in San Diego. I went to school in Santa Barbara about 100 years ago, and it's changed surprisingly since then. And I'd been there maybe five times over the last 40 years. And so writing about a place where I didn't live was difficult for me. You know, I went up there and spent some long weekends. There's always Google Maps, but I like to be in the area I write about so I can get in my car and go to any scene I want to write about or just drive around and kind of get a vibe. Right. And when I was in Santa Barbara, I was just in my car most of the whole time driving around and kind of vibing. But it was different for me to write someplace where I didn't live. And readers that have read me a lot will probably notice I wasn't as specific with streets as I maybe am with my San Diego books.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, you hit one street right on the money, State Street. And that is main drag through Santa Barbara. Yeah. And it goes way around and then comes back around the other side.
Yeah.
Right.
And, State Street, you can park down by the freeway and you can walk the entire part up to where it curves back around by the Arlington Theater, then you can come back down and there's like 100 bars. If you've a mind, you can stop and get a drink in every single one of them.
Yeah. You know, Matt, Jim and I have recently relocated from Southern California. And the one thing the only thing that sort of struck me was, you know, Rick drives from San Diego and up to Santa Barbara, and there's lots of interesting things about trips that he's planning and how he's going to do it and such. And the only thing that I would say is it felt like he was driving in another century, because traffic, we lived in Santa Clarita, and just to get from Santa Clarita to Santa Barbara, which is not that far away, took a lot longer, and to go to San Diego,
the traffic was horrible.
Go to San Diego was like, you know, like 6 hours.
No, it just depends on when you go. I've made it to Santa Barbara in under 3 hours, or not under,
oh
but
my
right
gosh.
Around 3 hours.
Well,
depends on when you go. But you have to plan every drive in Southern California around LA. So if you planned your time right. But even now, it's horrible driving in San Diego. So it's pretty bad everywhere. But
I know.
Time you're right.
And here in beautiful downtown Star, Idaho, our traffic jam consists of two cars and a red light. That's it.
Albuquerque's not much. There is a little traffic in Albuquerque, but it's not relative to us. There is no traffic in Albuquerque. But to folks who have lived here for a long time and they have seen changes, there is traffic,
you know,
but not
here,
compared to where we were using.
Here it's the combines get on the road. Okay. I need to take a break right here, so don't go away. Stay with us, Matt. And, you know, LA Talk Radio has been really, really, really good to the Writer's Block for the last 5 years. And we have grown significantly. And I think Bobby Jean would actually go along with that. And we actually appreciate so much the work that Sam Hassan and Ronan Rosner do to keep this show on the air and keep it fresh and new. And, of course, notwithstanding ourselves. And, let's just hear what you have to say about LA Talk Radio. Hey, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all, from sports to music to self-help to, well, just about anything, including talk. And right now, it's coming right at you. Why don't you sit back and enjoy at www.latalkradio.com. And we are back with you. It's 8:17. We are on the phone with Matt Coyle, actually a mystery writer extraordinaire. If you want to call and talk to Matt, take your chances, because we are having problems with the phone lines. If you can get through, the number here at the studio is 818-602-4929. And the number again is 818-602-4929. And again, if you can't get through, that's because there's issues with the phone lines. It'll go automatically to voicemail. So Don't get frustrated. Just, you know, keep listening to the show, and we're sorry for the problem.
If you have a question or comment, they could post it on the Writer's Block Facebook page, and then we could get back to you.
You can do that because Bobby Jean actually probably has that page up right now.
How did you know?
Oh, I'm guessing. Let's switch gears here a little bit, Matt, if you wouldn't mind. When you first developed Rick Cahill, did you patter him off of anybody, or did he just get totally pulled out of your imagination?
That's a good question. Like I said, I've been writing him for 18 years. When I first started writing, well, as you said in my bio, I knew I wanted to be a writer, blah, 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 when I was 14 or whatever it was. But the thing I didn't realize about writing is that you actually have to do it to become a writer. So it took me a solid 30 years until I started writing. And like I said, my life is, you know, it's been pretty mundane. And I knew when I wanted to write a character about a guy who had a dark past, probably was an ex-cop. But I didn't really have a great feel on the characters I started writing. I didn't know anything about writing. I didn't know anything about writers groups. I knew something about writing. I've been reading all my life. But I took some classes later after I'd already written the first draft. But every day I would write in the cocoon, what I call writing in a cocoon, where nobody has any input. Nobody's reading your pages. You're reading it every day. And you're thinking, well, this is genius. I mean, I'll be able to sell this thing and buy the house in La Jolla and never have to have a day job again. And sure enough, that was true because it took me 16 years before I quit my job. Anyway, so Rick, I'm going to be on a panel at Southern California Writers Conference here in San Diego on Sunday. And it was the very first conference I went to probably 17 years ago. And it was one of those conferences where you can send pages out ahead and the critique, a writer or agent or an editor will critique the pages, and then they'll meet you at the conference and they'll tell you what they thought. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough. I don't even think I had the, I may not have had the, it was definitely a first draft, and I don't even think I was completely done, but and this is back when they'd actually take 30 pages. I really pity the people who have to read the first 30 pages of the first draft of my book. But I was one of the people who read, and I got to talk to was mystery author named Alan Russell, lives here in San Diego, does really well with Thomas and Mercer. And he said, because I was writing in first person, and he said, you know, he said, the first thing is you can write. So that felt good because it's just too autobiographical. And he said, that's not unusual for a first book, particularly in first person, but you just have to get further away from yourself. You know, in other words, it was probably boring. So after revising, I don't know, I think I got stuck somewhere later, and I went back and started revising the beginning just so I could be doing something productive. And a sentence came to me out of the ether, I like to say, or my subconscious. I don't really know where it came from, but it was the first time I saw her, she made me remember and she made me forget. And that became the first sentence to Yesterday's Echo. When I, like I said, I don't know where the sentence came from, but when I thought about it, it really told me so much more about Rick Cahill that I didn't know, is that his past was so much darker. There'd been so much pain in his life that I didn't really understand yet. So once I got that hook into his backstory, then his characters, I really moved away from, you know, my own life quite a bit, and it became a much darker story, which is really what I wanted to write all along, but I didn't really know. And I still don't know Rick's complete story. I mean, with every book, it fills in a little bit. I certainly know him pretty well. Like I said, I've been writing him for 18 years, but I learned something new about him every time, every book. So, but from there, I realized, well, this guy's, you got to make his past much darker than I figured out exactly what it would be.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you into something else, because it intrigues me that you go with that story, because I had the same problem with the character I wrote about, the hunter. And finally, I had so many people asking me about him that I had to go back and do a total prequel back to where he first started, what he did. Mm-hmm. And so you could really get to know who this man was and how he became what he was. And it actually worked out pretty well. And have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about doing a prequel and started writing when he first joins the Santa Barbara Police Department?
You know, it has crossed my mind. It's funny you should mention that. A friend of mine who writes for my publisher as well, his name's David Putnam. He's a former San Bernardino, was it San Bernardino or San Bernardino sheriff's deputy. He writes a series about an ex-cop, and the first four books were after this guy had gone to prison. Uh-huh. And he ended up doing, uh-huh. he ended up writing four prequels, or he's writing three, fourth, he's almost done with. So he wrote the prequels, and I thought about that, but I figured when I wrote this book, it really covered the what I needed to get done from the backstory. Uh-huh. So for me, but I had thought about it actually, you know, quite a bit over the years, but when I figured out this book, I didn't think I really needed to do that. This is the book I knew I needed to write when I was writing even the first book. But halfway through writing Yesterday's Echo, I realized I was writing a series. Mm-hmm. I personally just wanted to write a damn book because I told everybody I was a writer. I never did anything about it. So I wrote a book. And then I realized I'm writing a series. And I knew the whole impetus for this guy's life is his tragic life is the death of his wife. And that was in the back. That's backstory.
Right.
To his,
right.
You know, so I realized, well, you know what? At some point, you're going to have to tackle this. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to tackle it now. I had written an emotional book 2 years ago called Blood Truth, where Rick deals with the learns the truth about what happened to his father, also a cop before him. Mm-hmm. And my own father had passed just a little bit before I started writing that book, so it was kind of an emotional book for me because I used to show him pages when I was writing and mm-hmm. all that. And it was emotional for Rick, so I didn't really want to write an emotional book. But of course, I was under contract and the clock was ticking, and I had to write something, and I was already behind. So I was doing the what if game, and the only what if that worked for me was, what if Rick goes to Santa Barbara and learns the truth about Colleen's death? But the good thing is, once I started writing 10 pages in, I realized, man, this is the book that you needed to write. This is the book that you spent 17 years getting good enough to write. And I was really happy that it landed at this particular time. And I'm so happy for you guys to say that you want to read my other books, and this works well enough for a standalone. I always knew it worked as a standalone, but my concern when writing this book, I'm human. I do think about reviewers and readers. I definitely want to be true to my readers, but I write a serialized series. It's not episodic. There's carryover for Rick. Obviously there's baggage that goes with each carries from one book to another. So I'm always thinking when I'm writing the next book, you know, I want to, because everything matters. Every just bad decision he's made, there's ramifications. And so that was my main goal when I started writing his series, that I wanted that everything he did to matter. But so in each book, I don't want to have spoilers. I want new readers to understand him well enough to understand why he does what he does. But I don't want to have spoilers so they won't go back and read the other books. But I don't want to bore my other readers, too. And so I said to myself, this is a long story, but there's some merit to it. I said, when I'm going to write this book, I realized the only way I can write it the right way is I can't worry about new readers. I have to,
right.
The people that have carried, that read me from the beginning or picked me up along the way will understand the darkness in this guy. And I can't worry that much about new readers. Now,
what you
have said tonight and what other reviewers have said tonight that haven't read me and some readers on Amazon, what have you, have said the same thing, that it, you know, it worked for them, thank God. So the moral of the story is, it's just write the damn book you're supposed to write, and don't worry about the rest of the stuff.
Well, and I'm kind of eager to see where it goes from here. Mm-hmm. You know, because he's I know that we want to probably keep talking a bit about process, but you mentioned about the first conference, and you had submitted pages, and I know that you are a member of four different writers organizations: Mystery Writers of America, Sisters in Crime, Private Eye Writers of America, and International Association of Crime Writers. And I know Mystery Writers and Sisters in Crime, I just went to look at the Festival of Books. It's now called Festival of Book Stories and Ideas
year.
Yes, it's their 25th anniversary, and because stories is more than books, it's a little thing that they describe on their homepage. They've actually changed the name this year. But I see that mystery writers and Sisters in Crime are both going to be at Festival of Books. Do you normally go as a member of that group? You want to talk a little bit about how you interact with the public, book signings, things
that's
like that?
Good.
We usually
that's,
run out of time and
point.
we don't get there, but I think authors would love to know, you know, about
sure.
About
are you
that.
Talking about LA Time? Are you talking about
yes,
LA
yes,
Festival
LA
Books?
Time? Yes, LA Times yeah. Festival books now
right.
Book stories and ideas.
It's usually
oh,
the
really?
Same weekend as the Cowboy Festival.
And it is again
I will say, yeah,
yeah, and it is again this year too.
It is always the hottest day of spring when I go up there. That much
yes.
I know.
Oh yeah, well yeah, that's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I love the LA Times Festival books. I went there as a fan, and it's a great opportunity to meet writers. I'll tell you, you talk about the, you know, book signings and such. Every writer has a book signing story, and I, you know, they have lots of stories, but they have one that's kind of different. And my, mm-hmm. mine was my very first one. It was the LA Times Festival of Books. I was so excited. My book was just coming out. I'd practiced writing my autograph for like 3 weeks, you know, so I could almost make it legible. And I thought, well, I'm going to be at this festival and people are going to buy my book and come up and have me sign it. And I'll know, you know, I'm a writer now. I'm a professional writer. So I was there in the mystery tent. The very first out for 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, I was right next to the schedule for the weekend. There was three of us there. It was me, a self-published guy next to me, and a guy with a smaller publisher than mine in the end. So I just wanted to have one person come up and with my book and go, would you sign this, please? Because I practiced my autograph so assiduously. And 50 minutes in, 5-0, I've got nothing. No one's come by to sign my book. The self-published guy next to me has got an entourage already. The guy next to him is done like 3 or 4 books. I got nothing. So this couple walks up and they look at I was sitting next to the schedule. They look at the schedule and they say, oh, T. Jefferson Parker is going to be here tomorrow. And honest to God, I live in San Diego, and T. Jefferson, Jeff, as we call him, had just been at Warwick's that Thursday, Warwick's in La Jolla. And I said to him, oh, you know, I just bought his latest book. He was down at Warwick's in La Jolla. And I love it, of course, because he's a great writer. I love all his books. And I go, La Jolla? I go, yeah. I live in San Diego. They go, we live in La Jolla. Yeah, I go, no, but no kidding. And I pick up my book, Yesterday's Echo, which has got a picture of La Jolla Cove on it. And I go, well, this is my book. See, La Jolla Cove, that's fantastic. And somehow we got on the topic of restaurants. I said, yeah, a lot of this takes place in a restaurant. And they go, you're kidding. Oh, and they go, no. I say, no. And they said, well, the guy that used to own Chuck's Steakhouse does carpentry for us. And I said, you're kidding. And I, because it's the truth. I said, I worked at Chuck's. The guy you're talking about, I fictionalized his character in the book. They're saying, you're kidding. I said, no, they didn't buy the book.
Oh my gosh.
Now, Bobby Jean, you wonder why the world is so small when you live in North County, San Diego.
Yeah, but oh my goodness, what a story.
You know, everybody. I know, what a great story. We have to take a real quick break, and then we'll be back with you. And right now, let's find out what's happening out west.
Once upon a time, there was a man and wife. This man and his wife loved serving others through the retail trade. One day, the man heard a voice whisper, "Go west." His wife did not hear the voice. The next day, the voice commanded, "Go west." And they did. And they found themselves in a new land, and it was good. And the voice said, "Open a business." And they did. And they called the business Out West, as that was where they were. And the voice said, "Invite authors and artists and musicians to Out West." And they did. And today that business continues to provide platforms for those with the creative spirit and great merchandise. And the voice exclaimed, "Use coupon code RADIO when you shop at outwestshop.com. And the man and his wife, their friends and customers live happily ever after. Because it's always a great day out west.
And that is a fact. It is always a great day out west, especially in Albuquerque. I happen to know the people that commercial's about. Very nice people. As a matter of fact, if you call that number, you're going to get either Bobby Jean or her husband, Jim.
Yes,
I guarantee
will.
You.
Yes,
you will. So we are back. It is now 7:34.
Oh, LA time, and yeah.
LA time, and we are, I know, I'm an hour, like, we're both an hour ahead. We're on the phone with Matt Coyle, just a mystery writer extraordinaire. The guy can really pen a story. I give him all the kudos that he deserves because, I mean, I write Westerns, and I try to write the best Western I can, but this guy writes mysteries like nobody's business. And if you want to talk to Matt, again, take your chances, 818-602-4929. If you get through, you're doing much better than most people. And again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay, Matt, we're back with you. Great. And what were we talking about before I so just rudely cut you guys
well,
off?
Book signings. Matt, do you have any advice for authors on how to set up, promote, you know, and have a little bit different experience than your first one? Have you had some success stories, some tips you can share?
Well, I will say that you mentioned all the organizations that I'm a member of, and joining the organization will give you a huge boost, especially Mystery Writers of America and Sisters in Crime, because you'll end up, like I live in San Diego, there's a Southern California Mystery Writers of America. Usually the meetings are up in LA, but that's not too bad of a drive for me. And there's a Sisters in Crime Orange County. There's even a Sisters in Crime chapter down here in San Diego now. Mm-hmm. So you go there, you meet other writers, and you're able to, and there's always a speaker generally there's a speaker at these meetings, so it'll be a writer of some renown at times. And so you get to know them, and also it's great for doing research because they'll have cops, they'll have DAs, you know, prosecutors, they'll have defense attorneys, they'll have you know, doctors, so you can really get a help you get talk to someone who will actually talk to you later when you have a question regarding research. That's a big boost. Mm-hmm. But also you're meeting other writers, and you're getting the opportunity to find out how they do things. You're getting the opportunity to, you know, find out who people's agents are and things like that. Regarding signings, I went to smaller publisher. They do a great job and some pre-pub marketing, but really all the signings I do on my own. I do hire outside publicists for some things. Interviews and things like this, but I do all my signing. I do set up all my signings myself. And the good thing about that is you're talking to the bookstore when you're setting them up and you're building a relationship. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I will say getting on the road, this funny thing that I find it finally, I was finally saw the light a couple of years ago. Cause I go to a lot of different, stores throughout the West, and I go into Texas, and sometimes I'll go to a book signing, say at Poison Pen in Scottsdale, Arizona, well-known mystery store. And they generally try to pair me up with somebody local because honestly, very few people come to see just me, which is fine. But here's the thing. If you're a decent person and you can write, you know, don't be a jerk. That's the number one thing.
Well, there you go.
Right. So you're because you like bookstore staff anyway. So mm-hmm. if you're a decent person and you can write and they like your work, they will hand sell your work throughout the year. So you may have sell two books that night or three or five or something. But I have stats of where all my best stores are or locations in terms of sales, and they're all the places I go to, all the areas that I go to, because I am a jerk, but I can hide it when I go out in the public. So they don't know. And I'm a decent writer. So you make friendships and they'll hand sell your books. And that's the one thing you do. Obviously there's money, there's expense involved in travel, but I'm trying to build a brand over the long haul. So for me, it's been very beneficial. And I love going to bookstores. I mean, who wouldn't want to go to a bookstore?
Right.
Well, and they personally, that's the tragedy of us losing bookstores is those people that are passionate about the written word and passionate about what they do. We as readers, we really need them, you know. And libraries do an amazing job as well. But when we start to lose these independent bookstores, our communities also begin to kind of lose their souls. I mean, these are the places, same thing with music stores. I mean, these are the places that... you know, are the beat of our souls. So we got to keep our bookstores alive, right, Jim? Keep those independent bookstores alive.
I believe so. And you know, the public things that we used to do with the Cowboy Bookstore and the book signings you used to have at your shop there in Newhall. And a really great story I have from the very first year I did the Cowboy Festival with you and Jim. Mm-hmm. It was a Sunday morning. It was 9 o'clock. Court and I were sitting at the tables inside the building. We were the only ones there. Mm-hmm. And why Court was there, I couldn't tell you, but he was there that early. And
he always got there early.
This guy walked up, kind of a skinny guy, long hair, most of his hair shoved under his baseball cap. And he starts looking at my stuff and he goes, well, you know, what are these about? And so I told him and he goes, I want all of them. Mm-hmm. I had like three or four. So I sold him all of them and he walked away. And Court said, who was that? And I said, that Keith Carradine.
I never heard that story from you. Oh my gosh.
And Court says, my God, it was. You know, it's pretty good if you can get by Court. Yeah. You know, because that guy's sharp as a tack.
Absolutely.
Actually, the old bookstores really need to come back, and only because you walk into a bookstore and you find somebody and they can tell you exactly where everything is and talk to you about it.
And talk to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're advocates.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's really sad. Bobby, you want to add? Go ahead.
Some independents are making a comeback, and the ones that focus on having signings, they build a loyalty with their fans, with their customers that way. And the fans, you know, hey, last week I got to see CJ Box came in, or Jeff Parker, or Robert Grace, or Michael Connelly, and I realize that there's a lot of competitions, but they're bringing in these fantastic writers for me to meet. I'm going to buy all my mysteries from that store now. You know what I mean? I think people really do. It's really helped down here in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's wonderful. Hey,
Bobby, would you like to ask?
I will. I know we're running low on time. So, of course, we love to have our guests talk a little bit about when they hit a creative block or a writer's block. Hmm. Do you? And what do you do when you get it? What do you think about it? How do you get over it? Take it from there.
Well, unfortunately, I quit drinking before I started writing, so I can't drink. I don't really have a outline, but I do know the more I write, the more things I know. Well, I have to have this scene. I have to have these things. Things have to start to fill in for me in the future. So if I'm really stuck, I will write something that I know I have to write that occurs later in the book. I mean, I write basically chronologically, but if I do get stuck, I'll jump ahead and write something I know I need to write until I can get back to that that block. But a lot of times I just fight through it. I just sit there and stare at that damn monitor and think, first of all, I think, well, you're a fraud. You don't know how to do this anymore. You've always been a fraud. You know, this is usually in the middle of the book. You should turn in your writer's card. This is horrible. And then after I get through that and stop playing with my dog, you just got to sit there. It's putting your rear end in the seat and just fighting through it. But like I do sometimes, you know, I'll just write ahead.
Mm-hmm. So I think that you're the first one that, Jim, I think he's the first one to say a little negative talk was actually
I've never heard anybody sit there and say, I'm a fraud.
Yeah, but I think playing with the dog was really the thing that unleashed the writer's block.
Well, you've read at least one of my books. You know that I'm not an optimistic person. But anyway.
But you're also not a fraud. No.
Well, yes, we know you're not a fraud.
You should read some first drafts.
First drafts.
I will say that the days, the nights, or days now, that I when I do get stuck, and if I sit there and really fight through it, some of those become my most productive writing times. It's kind of, mm-hmm. It's weird. So if you can fight through it long enough, sometimes you really get going.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, of all the authors we talk to, the ones that seem to be able to work through it the very best are the pantsers. And Yeah, and I mean, we have Afton, Paris Afton Bond. She's a pantser. Hank is a pantser. You're a pantser. And they all of you guys seem to be able to roll through that block period in a very short period of time. When the people who write the outlines, they kind of get stuck on that outline and they just can't how to get out of that.
And it also seems as though a deadline may be a part of an equation.
Yeah.
And not everybody's writing for deadline, but the folks that do or come from a journalist background, it seems too like when you're used to writing on a deadline, you know, you just got to get through it. You know,
right. And we have to do one more ad, if you wouldn't mind, please stick with us. And let's hear what Creative Edge has to say.
Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Well, why don't you give Creative Edge Publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you can find them at www.creative-edge.services.
And they are some of the best in the biz. They're fairly new. And Mickey is a great guy. And if you're looking for a publicist, you can't go wrong. Give him a holler. Go to his website. Again, that's www.creative-edge.services. Okay, Matt, we're almost running out of time here. Is there anything that you'd like to say to a new writer before we hang up, you know, just unceremoniously on your butt?
So you want me to be optimistic? That'll be tough.
No, don't be optimistic. Just tell a new writer what you actually think.
Yeah.
Well, you got to put your ass in the seat. You got to write. You got to write every day. You got to write when it's easy. You got to write when it's hard. You know, learn the basics. There's plenty of opportunities to do that. And I would say get in a writer's group or at least have some beta readers that know your genre to a degree, and they can't love you. You can't have readers. I mean, you can have readers that love you. You can give them pages. But when you want to get better, you have to have people that know the genre to a degree that don't love you. They can like you, but they can't love you. Right. They're going to love your work if they love you. But you just have to stay after it, and you have to realize, although you do think that first draft is genius, it's not going to be as good as you think it is. So you got to just keep revising, keep writing. And I will say, here's a good tip. If they're thinking about, they're at the point where they want to get an agent, check out our Publisher's Marketplace online. I think it's about $30 a month now, where it'll tell you what agents are agenting who, what they're looking for, what publishers are publishing what. It's an amazing site to get all sorts of information, Publisher's Marketplace. I think it's a vital.
Okay.
Well, that's great.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, why don't you give our listeners an idea where they can find you? I know you have your website, which is mattcoylebooks.com.
Right.
And
I'm
your
on
email.
Go ahead. I'm
Facebook.
Facebook is... I'm Matt Coyle. Basically, if you want to see pictures of my dog doing couch yoga, you can look at me on Facebook. I do have an author page on Facebook now. I just started one finally after all these years, Matt Coyle Author. I'm on I'm on Twitter a little bit. I just can retweet stuff. I don't do much on Twitter. It's I don't even know what it is. It's Coyle M or something. And Instagram, I'm just learning how to do it. It's mcoyle044, I think. But yeah, if you want to reach me via my website, my email address is mattcoylebooks@gmail.com. And I'm always happy to answer readers. And even when they tell me I got something wrong with a gun or something, I'll answer them.
Okay.
And your Crime Corner podcast, I did finally find it today.
You.
But could you just tell us how to get there directly?
Yeah, how to get there directly.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's if you just look, it's on Authors on the Arc Global Radio Network, Crime Corner with Matt Coyle. You just Google it and you'll be able to find it. I actually post on Facebook before I'm going to do a show. A week from, what's today, Thursday? A week from tomorrow, I'm doing a show with Corey Lynn Feynman. If you follow me on Facebook, I will.
That's probably the easiest.
I do it about every. Yeah. I do it every 2 weeks, but depending on my writing schedule, it fluctuates a little bit. I do really enjoy doing it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now, if your friends want to know where they can find this show, I will be sending you directly the link tomorrow morning. Or you can also go on to our latalkradio.com/content/writersblock, and you can pick up the podcast there.
Within course, like 3 minutes.
almost instantaneous. This, of course, has gone out live, so all your friends that were listening live, hi.
Yeah.
And there's only two of them.
Thank you. Yeah, both of them. Yeah. That's me. I have lots of friend. And I want to thank you for spending time with us tonight, Matt. It was really great having you, and your books are phenomenal. So, man,
I really enjoyed it.
Don't stop writing. You're like one of the best.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Oh, you guys, you're very welcome. Very welcome. And let's welcome Mr. Matt Coyle, and thank you so much for being with us tonight. So, Bobby Jean.
Yes.
Here we are. Next week, you will not be with me.
That is correct. I'll be listening.
Russ Avison will be here. And we're going to be interviewing, once again, the miraculous Miranda Oh, author of the Chin Up, Tits Out trilogy. And she'll be joining us tomorrow or next week. And, of course, Tuscany Bay Books published her last book, Just Breathe. So we're looking forward to that. And other than that, I'm just sitting here going, wow, what a great show. wonderful.
It's a great book. Great.
Oh my gosh. So good. I don't know how he does it. You know, I try to write like that. And well, sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. Oh, well. Anyway, for Bobby Jean Bell, Mr. Russ Avison, myself, Jim Christina, and Ronan Rosner, Sam Hassan, and all the folks at LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.